Chapter 4. Do you know her? Apostrophe apostrophe said Christopher. I have seen her about the neighborhood. She goes by every morning. I think she comes into the town from beyond the common, and returns again between 4 and 5 in the afternoon. Apostrophe apostrophe, what does she wear? Apostrophe apostrophe, a white wool jacket with zigzags of black braid. Apostrophe apostrophe, Christopher left the post office, and went his way. Among his other pupils there were two who lived at some distance from Sandburn, one of them in the direction indicated as that habitually taken by the young person, and in the afternoon, as he returned homeward, Christopher loitered and looked around. At first he could see nobody, but when about a mile from the outskirts of the town he discerned a light spot ahead of him, which actually turned out to be the jacket alluded to. In due time he met the wearer face to face. She was not Ethelberta Petherwin, quite a different sort of individual. He had long made up his mind that this would be the case, yet he was in some indescribable way disappointed. Of the two classes into which gentle young women naturally divide, those who grow red at their weddings, and those who grow pale, the present one belonged to the former class. She was an April-natured, pink-cheeked girl, with eyes that would have made any jeweler in England think of his trade, one who evidently took her day in the daytime, frequently caught the early worm, and had little to do with yawns or candlelight. She came and passed him. He fancied that her countenance changed. But one may fancy anything, and the pair receded each from each without turning their heads. He could not speak to her, plain and simple as she seemed. It is rarely that a man who can be entered, and made to throb by the channel of his ears, is not open to a similar attack through the channel of his eyes, for many doors will admit to one mansion allowance being made for the riadier capacity of chosen and practiced organs. Hence the beauties, concords, and eloquences of the female form were never without their effect upon Christopher, a born musician, artist, poet, seer, mouthpiece, whichever a translator of nature's oracles into simple speech may be called. The young girl who had gone by was fresh and pleasant. Moreover, she was a sort of mysterious link between himself and the past, which these things were vividly reviving in him. The following week Christopher met her again. As he had not much dignity, he had not much reserve, and the sudden resolution to have a holiday which sometimes impels a plump heart to rise up against a brain that overweights it was not to be resisted. He just lifted his hat and put the only question he could think of as a beginning. Have I the pleasure of addressing the author of a book of very melodious poems that was sent me the other day? Apostrophe apostrophe, the girl's forefinger twirled rapidly the loop of braid that it had previously been twirling slowly, and drawing in her breath, she said, "No, sir." Apostrophe apostrophe, the sender, then? Apostrophe apostrophe, yes. Apostrophe apostrophe, she somehow presented herself as so insignificant by the combined effect of the manner and the words, that Christopher lowered his method of address to her level at once. Ah, apostrophe, he said, such an atmosphere as the writer of Eders by E. seems to breathe would soon spoil cheeks that are fresh and round as Lady Apple's, eh, little girl? But are you disposed to tell me that writer's name? Apostrophe, by applying a general idea to a particular case, a person with the best of intentions may find himself immediately landed in a quandary. In saying to the country girl before him what would have suited the mass of country lasses well enough, Christopher had offended her beyond the cure of compliment. I am not disposed to tell the writer's name, apostrophe, she replied, with a dudgeon that was very great for one whose whole stock of it was a trifle. And she passed on, and left him standing alone. Thus further conversation was checked. But, through having rearranged the hours of his country lessons, Christopher met her the next Wednesday, and the next Friday, and throughout the following week no further words passing between them. For a while she went by very demurely, apparently mindful of his offense. But effrontery is not proved to be part of a man's nature till he has been guilty of a second act. The best of men may commit a first through accident or ignorance, may even be betrayed into it by overzeal for experiment. Some such conclusion may or may not have been arrived at by the girl with the lady apple cheeks. At any rate, after the lapse of another week, a new spectacle presented itself. Her redness deepened whenever Christopher passed her by, and embarrassment pervaded her from the lowest stitch to the tip of her feather. She had little chance of escaping him by diverging from the road, for a figure could be seen across the open ground to the distance of half a mile on either side. One day, as he drew near as usual, she met him as women meet a cloud of dust. She turned and looked backwards till he had passed. This would have been disconcerting but for one reason. Christopher was ceasing to notice her. He was a man who often, when walking abroad, and looking as it were at the scene before his eyes, discerned successes and failures, friends and relations, episodes of childhood, wedding feasts and funerals, the landscape suffering greatly by these visions, until it became no more than the patterned wall tints about the paintings in a gallery, something necessary to the tone, yet not regarded. Nothing but a special concentration of himself on externals could interrupt this habit, and now that her appearance along the way had changed from a chance to a custom, he began to lapse again into the old trick. He gazed once or twice at her form without seeing it. He did not notice that she trembled. He sometimes read as he walked, and book in hand he frequently approached her now. This went on till 6 weeks had passed from the time of their first encounter. Latterly might have been once or twice heard, when he had moved out of earshot, a sound like a small gasping sigh, but no arrangements were disturbed, and Christopher continued to keep down his eyes as persistently as a saint in a church window. The last day of his engagement had arrived, and with it the last of his walks that way. On his final return, he carried in his hand a bunch of flowers which had been presented to him at the country house, where his lessons were given. He was taking them home to his sister Faith, who prized the lingering blossoms of the seeding season. Soon appeared as usual his fellow traveler, whereupon Christopher looked down upon his nosegay. Sweet simple girl, apostrophe he thought, I'll endeavor to make peace with her by means of these flowers, before we part for good. ... When she came up, he held them out to her and said, will you allow me to present you with these? ... The bright colors of the nosegay instantly attracted the girl's hand, perhaps before there had been time for thought to thoroughly construe the position. For it happened that, when her arm was stretched into the air, she steadied it quickly, and stood with the pose of a statue rigid with uncertainty. But it was too late to refuse. Christopher had put the nosegay within her fingers. Whatever pleasant expression of thanks may have appeared in her eyes fell only on the bunch of flowers, for during the whole transaction they reached to no higher level than that. To say that he was coming no more seemed scarcely necessary under the circumstances, and wishing her good afternoon very heartily, he passed on. He had learned by this time her occupation, which was that of pupil teacher at one of the schools in the town, whither she walked daily from a village near. If he had not been poor, and the little teacher humble, Christopher might possibly have been tempted to inquire more briskly about her, and who knows how such a pursuit might have ended. But hard externals rule volatile sentiment, and under these untoward influences the girl, and the book and the truth about its author, were matters upon which he could not afford to expend much time. All Christopher did was to think now and then of the pretty innocent face and round deep eyes, not once wondering if the mind which enlivened them ever thought of him. 3. Sandburn Moor continued. It was one of those hostile days of the year when chatterbox ladies remain miserably in their homes to save the carriage and harness, when clerks' wives hate living in lodgings, when vehicles and people appear in the street with duplicates of themselves underfoot, when bricklayers, slaters, and other outdoor journeymen sit in a shed and drink beer, when ducks and drakes play with hilarious delight at their own family game, or spread out one wing after another in the slower enjoyment of letting the delicious moisture penetrate to their innermost down. The smoke from the flues of Sandburn had barely strength enough to emerge into the drizzling rain, and hung down the sides of each chimney pot like the streamer of a becalmed ship, and a troop of rats might have rattled down the pipes from roof to basement with less noise than did the water that day. On the broad moor beyond the town, where Christopher's meetings with the teacher had so regularly occurred, were a stream and some large pools, and beside one of these, near some patches and a weir, stood a little square building, not much larger inside than the Lord Mayor's coach. It was known simply as the Weir House. Apostrophe on this wet afternoon, which was the one following the day of Christopher's last lesson over the plain, a nearly invisible smoke came from the puny chimney of the hut. Though the door was closed, sounds of chatting and mirth fizzed from the interior, and would have told anybody who had come near, which nobody did, that the usually empty shell was tenanted today. The scene within was a large fire in a fireplace to which the whole floor of the house was no more than a hearthstone. The occupants were two gentlemanly persons, in shooting costume, who had been traversing the moor 4 miles in search of wild duck and teal, a waterman, and a small spaniel. In the corner stood their guns, and two or three wild mallards, which represented the scanty product of their morning's labor, the iridescent necks of the dead birds replying to every flicker of the fire. The two sportsmen were smoking, and their man was mostly occupying himself in poking and stirring the fire with a stick. All three appeared to be pretty well wedded. One of the gentlemen, by way of varying the not very exhilarating study of four brick walls within microscopic distance of his eye, turned to a small square hole which admitted light and air to the hut, and looked out upon the dreary prospect before him. The wide concave of cloud, of the monotonous hue of dull pewter, formed an unbroken hood over the level from horizon to horizon. Beneath it, reflecting its wan luster, was the glazed high road which stretched, hedgeless and ditchless, past a directing post, where another road joined it, and onto the less regular ground beyond, lying like a ribbon unrolled across the scene, till it vanished over the furthermost undulation. Beside the pools were occasional tall sheaves of flax and sedge, and about the plain a few bushes, these forming the only obstructions to a view otherwise unbroken. The sportsman's attention was attracted by a figure in a state of gradual enlargement as it approached along the road. I should think that, if pleasure can tempt a native out of doors today, business will never force him out, apostrophe he observed. There is, for the first time, somebody coming along the road. Apostrophe apostrophe, if business don't drag him out, pleasure'll never tempt then, is more like our nater in these parts, sir, apostrophe said the man, who was looking into the fire. The conversation showed no vitality, and down it dropped dead as before, the man who was standing up continuing to gaze into the moisture. What had at first appeared as an epicene shape, the decreasing space resolved into a cloaked female under an umbrella. She now relaxed her pace, till, reaching the directing post, where the road branched into two, she paused and looked about her. Instead of coming further, she slowly retraced her steps for about 100 yards. That's an appointment, apostrophe said the first speaker, as he removed the cigar from his lips. And by the Lord's, what a day and place for an appointment with a woman. Apostrophe apostrophe, what's an appointment? Apostrophe apostrophe, inquired his friend, a town young man, with a tussled complexion and well-penciled brows halfway up his forehead, so that his upper eyelids appeared to possess the uncommon quality of tallness. Look out here, and you will see. By that directing post, where the two roads meet, as a man devoted to art, Ladywell, who has had the honor of being hung higher upon the academy walls than any other living painter, you should take out your sketchbook and dash off the scene. apostrophe apostrophe, where nothing particular is going on. One incident makes a drama. And, interested in that proportion, the art sportsman puts up his eyeglass, a form he adhered to before firing at game that had risen, by which merciful arrangement the bird got safe off, placed his face beside his companion's, and also peered through the opening. The young pupil teacher, for she was the object of their scrutiny, reapproached the spot whereon as he had been accustomed for the last many weeks of her journey home to meet Christopher, now for the first time missing, and again she seemed reluctant to pass the hand post, for that marked the point where the chance of seeing him ended. She glided backwards as before, this time keeping her face still to the front, as if trying to persuade the world at large, and her own shamefacedness, that as he had not yet approached the place at all. Query, how long will she wait for him, for it is a man to a certainty, apostrophe apostrophe, resumed the elder of the smokers, at the end of several minutes of silence, when, full of vacillation and doubt, she became lost to view behind some bushes. Will she reappear? Apostrophe the smoking went on, and up she came into open ground as before, and walked by. I wonder who the girl is, to come to such a place in this weather? There she is again, apostrophe, said the young man called Ladywell. Some cottage lass, not yet old enough to make the most of the value set on her by her follower, small as that appears to be. Now we may get an idea of the hour named by the fellow for the appointment, for, depend upon it, the time when she first came about 5 minutes ago was the time he should have been there. It is now getting on towards 4:30 was doubtless the time mentioned. Apostrophe apostrophe, she's not come o' purpose. 'Tis her way home from school every day, apostrophe, said the waterman. An experiment on woman's endurance and patience under neglect. 2-1 against her staying a quarter of an hour. Apostrophe apostrophe, the same odds against her not staying till 5 would be nearer probability. What's half an hour to a girl in love? Apostrophe, on a moorland in wet weather it is 30 perceptible minutes to any fireside man, woman, or beast in Christendom, minutes that can be felt, like the Egyptian plague of darkness. Now, little girl, go home. He is not worth it. Apostrophe apostrophe, 20 minutes passed, and the girl returned miserably to the hand post, still to wander back to her retreat behind the sedge, and lead any chance comer from the opposite quarter to believe that as he had not yet reached this ultimate point beyond which a meeting with Christopher was impossible. Now you'll find that she means to wait the complete half hour, and then off she goes with a broken heart. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.